And support begins in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome back to Nurture and Support. I am Mel at Karmic9 on Twitter, and we have another episode of Sharing All the Awesome with you today. As always, there's Kelly.
Hi, everybody. This is Kelly at KELLYTHUL on Twitter. And I'm happy, and I'm all excited to be uplifted by recommendations today, and we're going to probably just jump right into Mel's.
Yeah, he's saying that because right before we started this, I told him mine's not real upbeat, so he's just rubbing it in now.
Being a jerk. Shocker.
So I'm back to a book recommendation this week. This is a book that I do very much love, but I am going to tell you it's not going to leave you with a real joyful, happy, dancing, singing kind of feeling. This book is called The Ocean at the End of the Lane, and it's by Neil Gaiman, one of my most favoriteest authors ever. This book came out in 2013, and it's a very short book. It's only 181 pages. And I believe this is one that they categorize as one of his all-ages books. And I did a really good job of keeping myself spoiler-free before I read this book. And actually, I listened to the audiobook of this one. Neil Gaiman actually narrates the audiobook. He narrates a lot of his books. So if you like audiobooks, this is definitely one that I enjoyed listening to him read. I think the audiobook is something like only about 5 hours long, so it's I listened to it on my way to work and my way home over a week, and I really enjoyed it. But this story is one that I don't want to give too much away, and because it's so short, it's hard not to, because I really enjoyed going into it not knowing really anything about what the story was about except for the idea that it was told from the viewpoint of a small boy. So the gist of this story is, what the cover blurbs will give away, is that a middle-aged man goes back to his hometown for a funeral. And after that, he kind of drives around town, as one is wont to do, revisiting the places of their childhood, one of which was his childhood home, which leads him to a farm on a lane by his house that has a pond at the end of the lane. And all of this reminds him of basically his only friend as a child when he was 7 was a little girl named Letty Hempstock. And that farm on the lane was the Hempstock farm where she, her mother, and her grandmother lived. And Letty liked to call this pond at the end of the lane an ocean. And he would argue with her about how it was a pond. It was not an ocean. But Letty is a very strange little girl. And she's very wise beyond her years. And this is one of Neil Gaiman's stories. I don't know if you've read a lot of Neil Gaiman, Kelly, if you're familiar with his work. Okay.
No. Shocker again.
Phenomenal. Okay, well, he is phenomenal, and you really need to check some of his stuff out. He wrote American Gods, which is being turned into a TV series that's coming out soon or is being worked on. I haven't kept up with all the news on it. American Gods is another book well worth reading. But this one is a completely different kind of vibe to it. Neil Gaiman is amazing at being able to create a world that is very much like the world you know, and you think you know everything that's going on, and then he like turns a little corner, and all of a sudden you realize that the world that you thought you knew is not the world that's really there. And that's kind of what this book is about, is the differences between how you see the world as a child and an adult. And this little boy, as he goes and visits this farm, and he goes and he sits beside the pond, he starts remembering, basically, the events of a week or so of when he was a child, and how important Letty was to him and some very amazing things that she did for him. She essentially saves his life, and these are things that he remembers, that he has basically forgotten as an adult. And it's hard for me to describe without giving it all away, which I know makes it not sound very good. But it's a very moving story, and it's a fantasy. I like to call this kind of stuff creepy cute. Neil Gaiman has a real talent for cute type stories. They seem cute on the surface, but then when you look again, they're really very terrifying. And that's what he does best. And this seems like it's a sweet little children's story. And then all of a sudden, it turns into a full-blown, terrifying horror story, which is even more terrifying because it's told from the point of view of a 7-year-old boy, and his protector is an 11-year-old girl. And of course, it deals with, it deals with some magic. It's technically classified as a fantasy novel. So it does deal with some magic issues. He doesn't really stick to any particular mythology that I can determine. But it does deal with how myths kind of evolve in our minds and how we all look at them differently from when you're a child as to an adult. There's a particular monster that comes to play in the story, which really, really terrifies our little boy, who I keep calling a little boy because they never actually name him in the entire book. He doesn't have a name. He never says his name, obviously, and no one else ever says his name. So you go the whole book from a story that's being told by a little boy and you don't even know his name. And that adds a little layer of it could be you or it could be anybody that you know. And so it leaves you with a bit of nostalgia, and once you get to the end of the book, it leaves you a little melancholy, but hopeful for we're all a little bit better for having read something like this. I was going to read you one of my favorite quotes from this book is, "Monsters come in all shapes and sizes. Some of them are things people are scared of. Some of them are things that look like things people used to be scared of a long time ago. And sometimes monsters are things people should be scared of, but they aren't." And that's kind of the gist of the main evil in this story, is that it doesn't look like anything that you should be afraid of, but it's really the most terrifying thing of all, and really does a number on this little boy and his family. And I will warn everybody, if this is, even though it's an all ages type book, there's one particular scene that has a lot of violence against this little boy, which might be a little hard for really young children. Teenagers shouldn't have a problem with it, but this isn't something, if you're going to read it aloud to your little kids, you might want to be aware that that's coming along and sort of gloss over that part, because I found it very disturbing as an adult, as a lot of people do, violence against small children. But it's essentially the story of a little boy who encounters a very strange little family in the Hemstocks. And if you know your mythology type things, you'll very quickly kind of realize that the Hempstock family embodies the idea of the mother, the maiden, and the crone, in Letty being the little girl and her mother and her grandmother and the power that they have. And the power that's in this ocean that's at the end of the lane that Letty believes in so much. And you finally come to see what they're talking about when the little boy has to experience the ocean himself in order to try to survive this evil that has basically moved in with his family. It's a very good story that is very short. It won't take you very long to read it, or I suggest you listen to Neil Gaiman read it to you. Makes it all the much better. But you'll come to get a better understanding. To me, all of his books are kind of about that difference between the world that we look at and the world that's just under the surface of that, and the ways that it can change you. He's really good at telling you a story that does that, that makes you think about the world around you and realize that things maybe aren't quite what you've always thought they were. And you kind of leave one of his stories looking around you, wondering, you know, what's creeping around in the dark to come get you. Because his stories are scary, even though on the surface they don't appear to be until something jumps out and tries to kill you in the dark. Okay, so from the inside flap of the book, one of the things they say about it is that it's a groundbreaking work from a master. The ocean at the end of the lane is told with a rare understanding of all that makes us human and shows the power of stories to reveal and shelter us from the darkness inside and out. It's a stirring, terrifying fable, as delicate as a butterfly's wing and as menacing as a knife in the dark. See, that says it so much better than I can say it.
They pay people to write that.
No one pays me to do a thing. It's a beautiful story, but it's also terrifying. And it's moving in that way. So I really, especially for those who haven't read Neil Gaiman, this is a really short, it's a short, quick read that will give you a really good introduction to him. It's not my favorite book of his. I will have to do that recommendation another day. But I really do, this is probably my second favorite book of his that I've read. It's really beautiful in its own way and deals with the power of memory and the differences between what we go through and what we remember about our lives from the point of being children to being adults and the things that we kind of forget as we grow up. And that's an important thing to try and remember, is how we were as children. And being a child, the way you see the world is a little more realistic than as we grow up and we look around and we become so cynical and we protect ourselves by wiping away some of those bad memories. And while, you know, you have to look at this and see, is that really what happened? Is that what he did? Is he wiped all this out of his mind as he grew older? And when he came home, he finally remembered what really happened. So I love this book, The Ocean at the End of the Lane by Neil Gaiman. I would really, really love for all of you to read it, because I would love to talk to you about it, because I love it. It's beautiful, and I want everybody to go read it. So jump on that, because they'll probably turn it into a movie, as many of his books get turned into movies these days.
Okay, well, I'd like to finish this part up with two unhelpful questions, followed by a compliment with an unhelpful comment after it. Okay?
Okay, go.
So my two unhelpful questions. You know what else is a monster that you don't know is a monster? So you talked about the ones that's in there. Some things you should be afraid of,
yes,
but you don't know to. You know what else is like that?
What?
Knitters who podcast about knitting. So I just want to point that out. And I've been working to a point, because Mel is, you know, because I want to clarify that my contempt is not for knitters, because Mel is a knitter, and I like Mel. So I needed to clarify that, it's knitters who podcast about knitting. They are the enemy. So and hopefully that'll, atypical Ashley can start talking to her grandmother again, because I don't,
yes,
think she podcasts. So that'd be cool.
Well, it's okay if knitters podcast, just not if they podcast about knitting.
Yeah, because originally it was going to be knitters who podcast, but I still didn't clear you with
right,
that. So I had to go to knitters who podcast about knitting. So that's the focal point there. Second unhelpful question. When you say 181 pages, first of all, that's appealing to me. But does that 181, does it have some of the, like, chapter one where the whole page is just the number one so that my actual count's lower, or is it a pretty solid 181?
Oh, no. No, but that reminded me. Thank you. The last two pages are actually three pages, are his acknowledgments. And since I think probably most of our listeners are very cognizant of Twitter, because we're very all over Twitter. Neil Gaiman is quite possibly like a god of Twitter. If he tweets out a link to whatever something, he crashes their website. He's amazing. So if any of you don't follow Neil Gaiman, you really should. He's been on a break from Twitter trying to write some books the last few months, but he's shown up more and more these days. So, with that in mind, I wanted to read the last little section of his acknowledgments. The good folk of Twitter were extremely helpful when I needed to double-check how much blackjacks and fruit salad sweets cost in the 1960s. Without them, I might have written my book twice as fast. So, anyway, I love Neil Gaiman. He is a very lovely person on Twitter. And there he goes, thanking all of his Twitter followers for being so helpful, which is why he had to get off Twitter to finish his book, because Twitter takes a lot of time.
Yeah, it can pull you away. No doubt about it. And then the unhelpful comment was that through the 41 episodes of Nurture and Support, the one thing that that I've come across that I didn't realize is Mel has quite a way with words. And so sharing all the awesome is Mel's wording, which is very cool. I like it a lot. But so creepy cute. So hashtag creepy cute is good too. But unfortunately, I don't think we can use creepy cute for Nurture and Support. We'll have to modify it down to creepy goof or something. We'll have to tweak it. But I think we almost got a hashtag for us too.
Okay.
Creepy something. But keep working, because
we are creepy.
We got the creepy part. We just got to figure out what the other part is. It's not cute. We know that. So we'll figure that out. But it's just always good, striking, interesting language. So good.
Absolutely. And if anyone has any suggestions for the other part of that creepy hashtag, let us know.
Absolutely. Except if you're a knitter who podcasts about knitting. Not interested. All righty. Well, we'll go ahead and move into my recommendation, which will be a departure in terms of a little more. This one's a good contrast one here. I think we got a good balanced show, because this is kind of a thoughtful, well-architected story that you're talking about, get you thinking. What I'm going to recommend is really not going to have you thinking a lot. I'm fairly confident of that, but I do think you're going to enjoy the time you spend. And so what I am going to recommend is a TV series. It was a TV series that aired, as most of the recommendations I make, a while back. This is in the year 2000 that this TV series was playing, and it is called Jack of All Trades. And Jack of All Trades features our very good friend Bruce Campbell from Army of Darkness fame, and every Sam Raimi movie is a cameo, and Burn Notice, and everything else. And not the Phantom. He got close, but he didn't get the lead in Phantom, which probably was okay. I think he's probably happy about that at the end. But this, unfortunately, only ran 2 seasons, 22 episodes total. If you want to get a copy of it, you can go to Amazon. Shocker. You can go to Amazon, buy a box set there. There is also a couple folks on YouTube that have put most of the episodes up there. And so with a crafty search or two on YouTube, not particularly crafty, things like Jack of All Trades TV series, you're going to stumble across, at least I know of one individual that's got all 22 episodes. Now, they're a little, I'm assuming this person put it up a while back when there were size limitations, so they're done in like a nine-minute chunk, an eight-minute chunk, and then a little five-minute chunk kind of deal. So that's a little bit irritating, but the quality's really good. So not saying that promoting the use of possibly right-violating content, but you might want to do a search or two on YouTube. But Jack of All Trades, I assume, Mel, based, I saw a little nod there as I started to talk about it. You're familiar?
I will say that I have not seen every episode, but I do remember when it came out, and I did see a few. It there's some steampunk elements going on in all Jack of All Trades, so of course Mel liked it.
Absolutely. There's a lot of stuff going on in Jack of All Trades. So basically the premise of this series is Jack Stiles is a part of the Revolutionary War, a big player in there, swashbuckling kind of guy, saves Thomas Jefferson's niece from the French. A little unclear why the French had her in this French castle, but anyway, he saved her, and she decided she wanted to thank him. And so Thomas Jefferson figured this out and was a little displeased with Jack, and so gave him a new assignment in Palu Palu, which is a little island in the West Indies where there is a French governor, and it is going to be the place where Napoleon Bonaparte, played by Vern Troyer, let me say that again, Napoleon Bonaparte, played by Vern Troyer, is going to launch his world conquest. So Palu Palu is kind of like the hub of where that's going to start. So Bruce goes there as a special assignment. He connects up with an English spy who's there, Amelia Rothschild, and he's going to act as her attaché or assistant. And then he, in the first episode, comes upon this. There's the history in Palu Palu about this the Grand Dragoon, who is kind of a swashbuckling guy. And he the Dragoon wears a mask and a hat and a cape. And so Bruce basically begins to have that as his. So it's kind of like the Clark Kent Superman thing, that the Dragoon's got a black mask, but, you know, it doesn't hide the Bruce Campbell chin. And it would seem to me that if you had seen Jack Stiles and you saw the Dragoon, it would be fairly obvious from there. But it is hilarious. Pretty racy dialogue from time to time. A lot of innuendo throughout it, because there's a lot of interplay between Jack and this English lady, who holds her own. So it's, you know, it's not him just kind of throwing stuff out there. They're very equally matched, which is one of the actually not equally matched. She's like a lot smarter than he is, but he certainly doesn't lack for trying. But it is Bruce Campbell at his finest, just hilarious. Lots of quick quips and those types of things. It was the first, because basically this is considered, it's like a adventure comedy combination. It actually, when it aired, was paired with a show called Cleopatra 2525, and these were two half-hour shows together, the Power Hour, and it was the first 30-minute action sequence film for TV since the 70s. So I guess anytime that people do an action, they were doing the hour format, so this got back to the half hour. And best of all, it has what has to be one of the best theme songs of any television show ever. It's got from the halls of Montezuma to the shores of Tripoli in there. It's got a little bit of Yankee Doodle. They're singing it in a bar. There's a parrot. There's all kinds of things going on. But we'll be sure to, in the blog post, include the many different versions of YouTube videos out there. We'll include one of those that captures that opening sequence. I may try and send Mel a sound file to give you a little snippet in the podcast, but if not, you can certainly check it out on the podcast and catch it in its entire glory. And it's a toe-tapper. So it's fun. It's all about them. They are pretty brutal to the French. So if we have any French listeners in here, they do not depict the French in a positive light through this entire series. So you have to take that into account. But just really funny, and they cross paths with a lot of historical characters who may or may not have been alive in 1801 when this was gone. They don't really get too hung up about that. But the individuals who they cross paths with include Thomas Jefferson, as I've already mentioned, Blackbeard, Benjamin Franklin, James Madison, Napoleon, Bern Troyer, Napoleon and Josephine Bonaparte, the Marquis de Sade, Lewis and Clark, who are on a deserted island that they're convinced is Oregon, Sacagawea, King George III, crazy, Catherine the Great, crazy, and not Leonardo da Vinci. So they kind of said, okay, we can't be Paul, but it's actually Nardo da Vinci, who's his great-great-great-great-great-grandson, and who's got some evil plans going on. So in this process, they cross a lot of historical, quasi-historical characters. It appears that Jack was involved in some bigger moments of history, like the Louisiana Purchase, than we've been led to believe. And so those different pieces kind of come into play. But it is, it's mind candy. It's just, you just watch it and it's fun. It's clever. The lead female characters, strong and clearly kind of the only adult in this entire mix. The governor Coquette, is just a goof. There's a lead guard, Captain Bogard, and he's also kind of a useless guy as well. But they're all pretty funny characters. A lot of good interplay between the two. The historical characters are hilarious, and like I said, it's just pretty much nonstop that Bruce had. Looks like pretty free rein to do the kind of typical Bruce Campbell one-liners all throughout. Sam Raimi was involved, shocker. Sam Raimi was involved as more of an executive producer, and it's just an outstanding thing. You can get it on Amazon. If you're crafting on YouTube, you can find most of the episodes. I've not seen it show up on Netflix anytime soon, and I did some searches before the show to see if there were any other places, and outside of some of the hey, come here and watch the whole series, and it's a little bit of a sketchy website that I wouldn't want to point anyone to. I'd say do the Amazon thing, or you may want to just check YouTube out, because you're going to find some places where they're out. There's 22 episodes, and it's absolutely worth a watch. I was almost late for recording with Mel today because I started going back through it, and I'm like, I really, really like this, and so it's fun stuff.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Kelly. I'm going to have to go buy another DVD set so I can watch that. I had totally forgotten about that series.
Yeah,
Good thing, and I don't think Cleopatra 2525 got a second season.
I don't. I hope
That was
not.
not good. Oh, yeah, they should have done better after they weren't paired up with that one anymore. But yeah, I remember what I saw of it that I really liked it. And I think it was another one of those where they messed around with the times that it was on all of the time. I think is part of why it was hard to keep track and watch it. I think they were always changing the time slot it was playing. So that's never a good thing. But yeah, you gotta love Bruce Campbell, and he's always been a big fan of that series. I've seen him on Twitter when people try to talk to him about it, or they'd cosplay as him. That he's always very upbeat. He really loved that role, that show.
It was, I mean, it was really, I have a hard time finding anything wrong with it. I mean, it is what it is. It's not intended to be Battlestar Galactica reboot kind of storytelling or kind of connecting
Yeah.
things together. It's not trying to be Breaking Bad. It's just trying to be a half hour of fun, a little bit of adventure, and a wink to the audience through the entire thing. And I think they accomplish it. And both Bruce and the actress who was Angela Dutchin, they're both really good chemistry between the two of them. They're both really strong. Everybody does a nice solid job. It's hammy, so it's not nuanced performances from time to time, but it's really good. And it was just this Angela Dutchin, I thought, well, what else has she done? But it looks like she kind of stopped doing films right around like 2001 or so. So I don't know if her whole jack of all trades experience soured her on the acting profession or what, but we haven't seen much from her since then. So
That's a shame. Yep, I'm gonna have to get that so I can
yeah,
watch those, because I remember those being fun.
not that I'm a proponent of, copyright violation, but you might want to do a search or two on YouTube first before you buy those DVDs if you just want to catch some episodes. As long as they're there. Of course, they could be gone tomorrow and it'd be safer to get the DVD. So, and certainly then the right people get the money. So that's fair too.
Yes, absolutely. So with Kelly's upbeat recommendation, I think that takes us into social media. My social media recommendation this week is from Twitter, and I will not even attempt to pronounce this man's last name because I'm from Texas and I don't pronounce things very well. His Twitter handle is at Daniel GENNAOUI. And he tweets a lot of basically photos. He's into wildlife, extreme sports, and street art photos. And he has just really been knocking it out of the park lately with a bunch of just really beautiful photographs of everything from, like it said, street art to nature scenes that I really like. So I've really enjoyed his Twitter feed over the last couple of weeks. For some reason, it's been jumping out at me more than usual. So I recommend that you go follow him if you like wildlife photography or street art photography or just photography in general. And that Twitter handle again is at Daniel and then GENNAOUI. And of course, we'll have a link to that up on the blog post because it's hard to spell.
Ganui, maybe?
I have no idea how to say his name, so
Janui.
I'm
No,
not going to
no.
butcher it by even trying.
Yep. I don't mind. I'm gonna spell mine out too. I think I can say it all though. So I'm recommending Face Off winner J. Anthony Kosar, who is at KOSART Effects. Kozart Effects. So the first three letters of his last name, Art Effects. As you watched that episode or that series of Face Off, you certainly came across. You saw a lot of talent, obviously, from him. But you also, he seemed like a kind of particularly kind of nice, easygoing guy, friendly, not full of himself, and all those types of things. And I had the experience at the con I went to up in Chicago a while back. On the last day, I was going to make one last trip to go look at the horse head masks to decide if I was going to buy one. That was my big struggle.
Unicorn,
I
unicorn.
know you're pushing for the unicorn, but I ended up coming up with none. So, but maybe that'll change this next year. But so I went and looked there, and then on my way out, I'm just getting ready to leave and getting everything kind of together, and I look up and I go, "What? That guy looks like really familiar." And it was Anthony, and he had just got done talking to a little kid, and I just, "Hey, can I take a shot with us real quick?" And he was very, very friendly, and his mom and dad were there helping him run the booth. It was all very cool. So he's a really friendly guy. So J. Anthony Kosart, and again, that is KOSARTEFFECTS, Kosart Effects. And he's got a student of his, Dina, who's in the current competition, and so you'll see him tweeting out on Face Off Night's Team Dina quite a bit. So if you're watching the show, there's a little connection for you there.
Yeah, I know he's remained really supportive of the show, and he's even run the Sci-Fi Face Off Twitter account some evenings. So when the show's been on, so that's cool. And he seems really, really very nice, very supportive of his fellow artists, which is one of the great things about Face Off, is that they're typically very supportive of each other, unlike a lot of reality television.
Yeah, it's a real pleasant change to see people, "Oh, this person's in trouble, I'm going to go help them," even though it puts me maybe in a little less good position. It's actually people who respect each other, and that does make it for me a lot more enjoyable of those type of shows to watch versus some of this other stuff that's out there.
Yeah. We can't even name it because we won't watch it anymore.
Nope.
Right. So, I think that's all we have.
Yep. And so, speaking of nice guys, here's Matt to give you all the particulars about Nurture and Support and take us out. So, looking forward to visiting with all of you again next week.
You can contact us on our website, nurtureandsupport.net, or email us at nurtandsup@gmail.com. That's nurtandsupp@gmail.com, or tweet us at nurtandsup on Twitter.
Nurturing and supporting.